Hello and welcome to The Fix, a show about post-processing and the cool and creative things we get to do with our images after the shoot. I'm Sean Duggan, your host, and this week my guest is photographer and Lynda.com author Erica Thornes, and Erica is going to be showing us some of her beautiful underwater images and also sharing some of the processing techniques and workflow that she uses in Lightroom to improve and enhance underwater photographs. Well, welcome to the show, Erica Thornes. Thanks for taking the time to join me here on The Fix.
I'm happy to be here. This will be fun.
Yeah, you know, you were on, about 6 months ago, I think. It was in January of this year. And we did a show on some really great ideas that you had for ensuring that people's kind of precious family photos are protected against loss and hard drive failure and other catastrophes. You just had a lot of really great ideas, and that was actually one of our more popular shows. So I'm happy to have you back on again, and I'm really excited to be able to talk about some of the cool underwater photography that you're doing.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. I have almost three subspecialties. One of them is helping beginners along by teaching them photography basics. Another is silhouette photography and underwater and event photography. So it's kind of a strange hybrid. And I really get excited to talk about underwater photography. And I think this will be a lot of fun because I use a lot of Lightroom, and 90% of my work is actually done in Lightroom before I even bring it to Photoshop. So I'm excited to share some tricks and tips to get everybody producing fantastic underwater photos.
So how did you first get into that? What was the impetus that made you want to go and take pictures underwater? Was it just sort of circumstantial or was there a project you were working on?
Well, we just moved from New Mexico, and I was terrified of damaging my camera at the beach or in the pool. And I knew that with three little kids at that point that I wanted to take pictures there. So I found an underwater case for like $80 on the Canon clearance website. And we just started playing. And then I thought we had seen a really kind of esoteric underwater maternity picture online, and a friend of mine were talking about it, and we're like, well, let's do it. So we found a friend of ours who was pregnant, and she dove in the pool. And it kind of, it was fun because it was so much more difficult than above water. And I really enjoyed pushing my editing skills and pushing my composition skills further. And it's created just, it's a fun challenge. It's kind of like how some people relax playing video games. I relax by editing underwater photos.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know what you mean. It is cool to be able to just sort of, you know, chill out in front of the computer and work on photos, you know. And I imagine the underwater photos almost sort of maybe bring their own kind of tranquility to them, because there is that sort of, you know, soft lyrical feel to some of them, especially the ones that you create.
And the dramatic, the difference between the start image and the finished dramatic, and you can really see that process of change. So I think that makes it even more exciting.
So before we get into looking at the pictures discussing some of your editing workflow, what sort of a housing are you using for your camera? What sort of a camera are you shooting with?
Okay, well, actually, I always say whatever you have on hand is what you should use. I think that the processing works a lot better if you shoot raw. So any way you can get your camera that can shoot in that raw format underwater. JPEG's a lot more difficult to push the colors as far. So any camera that can shoot raw is what I use. So there's two different things that I do that are both really cheap. One of them, I have it right here in my bag, is a hard case. This is for a Sony camera. It's for just a little tiny kind of Sony mirrorless camera. This works great because it can do lots of frames per second. It can shoot raw. And the camera, it runs about $600 to $700 if you can find a good deal on it. And this only runs about $200. So you're looking at less than $1,000. That's a lot of money, but at the same time, you get a fantastic camera out of it. And for less than $200 to be able to bring it underwater or up into the snow or places like that makes this an affordable solution. The other thing that I do, and the Sony doesn't quite handle color renditions as well in skin tones, and it shoots faster and more rapid, so I can get a better composition out of it, but I can get better skin tones if I do this. It's basically an Evomarine giant bag. I drop my high-end DSLR camera with lens in this, and I seal it off just almost like a Ziploc bag. So, and these are also less than $300. So I try and avoid the $10,000 rigs that I see a lot of people using just because I don't have a $10,000 budget, but also because it's fun to be able to see what you can create with less than $300 worth of additional equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, and you know, compared to how, housings used to be, you know, several years ago, it was a lot more of a upfront cash investment to get into that. And nowadays, you know, as you've demonstrated here, the housings are a lot more affordable.
I mean, you can still get the high-end housings, and I highly recommend them. But at the same time, you don't have to do the kind of work that I'm doing. I think that you can be able to do it with for less than $200-$300 if you're careful. You can find a deal.
Cool. Well, listen, let's take a look at some of the work that you have been doing. So why don't you fire up your screen share, and we'll go into Lightroom and take a look at some of those wonderful images you've made.
Perfect. Okay, so this is from one of my very first shoots shooting underwater. This was using a little, probably a point-and-shoot camera that could shoot raw with the case. This is highly processed, but the preliminary edits were done in Lightroom. So this is years old. The pictures I'm showing you are just a small sampling of what I've done underwater. You can find a lot more of my stuff online. So here we go. This is from that same shoot right here. This is from that same shoot underwater. And she was just kind of playing and dancing. So you don't have to do something that's truly dramatic. We had, this one was also done in with a JPEG file, actually, using a little point and shoot that had an underwater case for it. It was done in our friend's pool. This has Lightroom edits and Photoshop edits, but this is what the Lightroom file originally looked like. And I was able to get it, you know, almost all the way done in Lightroom before I brought it to Photoshop and added some more canvas and removed that water line. But it's kind of amazing to see how much work actually gets done in Lightroom. I found out later that this model hadn't swam in 8 or 9 years and really didn't know how to swim. So keep in mind, you want to have your models be swimmers.
Well, it looks like you're in the shallow end of the pool there, so I'm sure that was reassuring for her.
Yep. And here's that.
And do you have a preference? Yeah, do you have a preference for shooting in pools with lighter backgrounds or darker backgrounds, or does it really just sort of, you take what you can get?
You take what you can get, and clarity of the pool and shooting raw is much more important. So I find that I'm really picky about my pools, not for anything else besides who's caring for them, how recently they've been cleaned, and if you can get basically the cleanliness of the pool and the direction of the light are far more important than the color of the backdrop.
Oh, okay. So, and in terms of the direction of the light, apropos that, do you have any preferences or favorite times of day or light directions that you're working with?
Yes. Okay. So that's something that I've covered in completely other shows. We can go on for hours talking about this. But my absolute favorite time to shoot in the pool is at dusk. A lot of people like shooting on either cloudy days, but my preference is at dusk on a bright sunny day, just as the light has stopped hitting the pool. And then I use a $10 insulation panel to work as a giant reflector to shine the light down. So you can see the light on her upper arm and part of her dress and part of her breast there is all lit from above. That's from somebody holding a 4-foot by 8-foot $10 styrofoam insulation panel that's silver on one side down into the pool. So the sun is hitting that panel, but not the pool, and then it's being redirected down into the pool.
Ah, I see. Great.
So, yep, so that's partially how we light those. And so here's one, that insulation panel's hitting her. This is right out of camera. You can see the little drain at the bottom, and you can see how blue it is. A lot of times when I see people post pictures underwater online, they are still blue like this because they're a JPEG file, and they're excited about the composition or the smile, but they haven't taken it that extra step. When you do take it that extra step, you can go from an image like this, which is fun. I love her graceful lines, to something like this. So,
oh, beautiful.
Yeah. And most of that was done in Lightroom. I did extend the canvas and remove the grain in Photoshop, but the majority of my color correcting work is all done in Lightroom. So.
Yeah, well, there's a tremendous amount of work you can do in Lightroom, you know, to any type of photograph. And I'm always kind of evangelizing that with other photographers, because I think a lot of people may not be aware just exactly how much work you can do in Lightroom.
Yep, and I think that is, you know, the fun part about this show is that we'll be able to go over a lot of those details. And this is the image that I think that we're going to go step by step through, and we're going to talk about all the work that was done in Lightroom. And because honestly, in Photoshop, I didn't do a heck of a lot to it. So we'll go over all the different steps to get it to this stage here.
And yeah, that's a really sweet one. I love their posture.
Yeah, yeah. And this one is a good example. Now, the next frame I'm going to show you is this, you know, the frame right before, right after this was shot. But this is Lightroom edits only. Nothing else was done to it. And here was what it looked like when I brought it into Lightroom. So the it's dramatic, the difference that was done. And it was Lightroom only. There was no Photoshop involved.
Yeah. So, and let me just clarify for those people who might be just listening to the audio version of this podcast. The big difference we're seeing here is that the unadjusted picture just has a really strong blue color cast from being photographed in the water, and then the corrected version is a lot more balanced, and you know, the blue is not so heavy-handed. The skin tones look a lot better, and if you are intrigued by that, you should definitely you know, take time to come over to the website thisweekinphoto.com/thefix and take a look at some of the examples that we're going to be posting there.
And what's amazing about this image too is that it almost looks monochromatic before we do the color adjustments, and so we're able to pull out all of the color that you can't see with your naked eye that's there in the raw file. And so it's going from a monochromatic image to like almost a dichromatic. It's really kind of cool. So then let's
see. Yeah, it's really nicely done. Beautiful.
Yep. And then I just want to show you, even when you're doing pictures really up close, like this one, see, this one still has that blue cast to it, and it's shot pretty up close, so the color cast isn't so dramatic. They just look kind of pale and washed out, you know, kind of like they're underwater. And then in Lightroom, we can bring it to about this level, so they can have good-looking skin tones underwater, if even without reflectors, extra lights, flashes. If you're shooting raw, you can bring those skin tones just to the correct balance, which is kind of fun to see underwater. And as you can see, the edits that I did in Photoshop afterwards were just very subtle, just a little bit more contrast, and I added a little bit more color to her lips, because I've discovered with all the color correcting I do in Lightroom, I still struggle to get the lips the right color. And I could do a little brush in Lightroom and just do that, but it's so much easier for me just to go into Photoshop and use the tools in there to bring out the lip color. But beyond that, yeah, so much of the processing was done in Lightroom. So, yay. All right. So should we get started going through and processing the underwater picture of my two girls?
Yeah, by all means. That sounds like a good plan.
A fun thing to do. All right, let's do that. Okay. So I'm going to start by showing you the original image here after Lightroom edits, so you can see what we're going for. As you can see, there are still the little lane holders for separating underwater from, or the shallow end from the deep end. You can see that there's still the little pumps. You can see the drain. You can see the lights and the plug-in for my vacuum. So everything else that I did to edit for this photo was basically done in here in Lightroom. So let's show you what we can do. Oh, and let me show you the final image first. Here we go. So here's the final image with all of those removed. You can see I kept the tile around the edge of the pool because I thought it kind of framed it well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here, let's start with the original file. Now, I'm not going to do
screen.
Yes, exactly. I'm not going to do the full screen for this.
Such a such an amazing difference, you know, between the original one. I can see how somebody who is not aware of what can be done to the image through post-processing, how they might be kind of really disappointed when they took these pictures and go, oh, God, just so blue and muddy.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, how does Erica get that color? And I'm struggling with this. What do we do? This is normal. And so when I look at the back of the camera and I see this, I'm like, great, we nailed it. And people around me kind of look at my camera and go, wait, what? I'm like, no, I promise you, the color's there. I promise you, we do not have to convert to black and white. We can do this. And so the very, very first step that we need to do to be able to do this, I actually start at the top of my panel here at the basics panel, and we start with white balance. So the very first thing we need to do is we need to slide that white balance thing almost all the way over. And I sometimes pick like a white spot on the image. Right now, my white balance is set at around 29,000. So like sometimes we'll grab the little dropper and I will pick a neutral spot. So my daughter's wearing a white tank top. So I'll pick a white spot there. And I'm like, yeah, not quite. And I'll use that as a starting point to get to where I needed it. So we can get there by using the dropper. So let's go back to like around where we had it before, which was 29. And then the tint was way over here. All right, so the very next step I'll do is I'll mess with the tone curve. And for underwater photography, I often don't change the exposure very much, nor do I mess with the contrast here. Depending on what my image looks like, I will bring up the highlights a ton, unless I'm using a reflector, but then I bring the highlights down. So it just depends on how much dynamic range you have in your original image. And for this one, I didn't have so much. So I really jacked those highlights way, way high in order to get a little bit more depth into the image.
Uh-huh.
So this really depends on what you started out with originally. So this little slider worked for me. It might not work for your image. Another thing I do when I go through this is, as you can see, there's not much going on in the clarity or the vibrance or saturation. I don't mess with that very much at the beginning because this is something that at the end I might do, but it's not the best place to play with color. If you need to up the vibrance or the saturation, these are global adjustments. And so it'll be much better when we get down to the color adjustments to mess with this. And I'll show you why and how in a minute. Now, I also didn't mess with, I brought the clarity up a tiny bit. I also sometimes mess with the tone curve when I'm doing these. If I do anything in the tone curve when I'm doing underwater, I'll do something called a little tiny S curve, where I'm going to bring the highlights up a little tiny bit and the shadows down. And what that does is it changes the straight line on the tone curve to the highlights are a little higher, the shadows are a little lower, and that's called an S curve. Now they have point curve down here where it says custom. You can have all these different ones. You have linear, you have medium, you have strong, and all of those just create a larger S than I typically like for my images. So I always do a custom. So, yep.
Excellent. And of course, you could, I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but you could save a preset that has that curve there if you wanted mm-hmm. to.
Correct. Yes. You will go over presets. Okay. So the most important section for underwater photography for me is going to be messing with the color adjustments. The color adjustments are huge in underwater photography, and we can take this image in so many ways and so many places with just the hue and saturation. Now here, as you can see with the hues, I've got the red slided all the way over towards orange. I've got the orange slid all the way over towards red. I've got the yellow slid pretty far over towards orange and the green slid all the way over towards blue. Now it's kind of a funky way to do it, and it would not be something that you would choose above water. Once I've got a really pretty looking hue there, saturation, luminance, I will save this. And that's what we'll talk about presets now, because this can be a challenge and a trick. So we're going to save this right now as a preset, as a new preset, and then we'll go and we'll just mess it up. And then we can just go through and figure out exactly what looks good and why. So we have over here on the panel, on the presets panel, we can create a new preset. Right here, there's a little plus symbol. So if we click on that, we're able to great one. So let's call this Sean the Fix. All right. And I'm going to put it in my underwater folder, and we're going to check all, because that way we can get back to the stage. So if I'm editing and I push something too far or I don't like it, if I've created a preset, I don't have to go back through my history panel to grab back where I liked the image. I can also create a duplicate copy of that image and save it at this stage, but I can just create this preset and just bring it back to it. So I like creating presets because I mess around with my underwater photos all the time, and that way I have all these different points where I can go through and go, oh yeah, no, that looks great, let's do it. So let's create this one. So just write down here.
Do you before you create that, let me just clarify for people that in the develop preset dialog, where you can pick and choose which settings are saved as the preset, you want to make sure that at least if you're creating a preset that is designed to be used on other photos, that there are not any kind of image specific adjustments, maybe to brightness or contrast, that wouldn't work on another image.
Right. And I do that sometimes, but sometimes I don't. It just really depends on the image, because a lot of my images are shot in my own pool. And as you can see, we'll go back to it. You can see that the pool looks really, really blue. I mean, pale at the bottom. And I darken that down a lot, often using a brush, an adjustment brush. And so some of my presets will actually contain the graduated filters, the radio filters, and the and some of these specific spot treatments. And that's just because I'm shooting in the same exact location over and over again. And then if I see my image looks funky on the sides, I'll just go and uncheck that and copy and paste and start a new one.
Right.
Okay. So now we have Sean.
Do you ever use snapshots in when you're editing? I'll use those a lot if I want to sort of, you know, kind of similar to what you're doing with the presets, but I'll just create snapshots of the image at basic, you know, at certain kind of milestone points in the editing process, and that way I can always go back to the snapshot if I want to see how it looks in a different way.
I don't, because I want to be able to use those presets again for other images later. And so it's better for me to save the preset and just all the adjustments than it is to save the snapshot. So like, let's say,
total sense.
So here's some of my other underwater presets that I've had. That one does not work for this image. And so I've created all of these over time with each of the underwater shoots that I've done that I've created. And you can see that they will look at the red hues way over at 97 plus 97 for this. And this looks really great. Like, we can just go with this color tone instead. So what I've done is I can go through and I can find a preset. There, Underwater 4 was this one's, you know, preset that we used originally on this image. So I can go through and I can find what preset works best for what the lighting was at the time. And as you can see, some of them look absolutely wretched, but they look perfect for another image. Like, even Underwater Fave, which is obviously my favorite preset, is not a very good preset for this exact photo. And this is one I just made the other day, and it looked fantastic on the image I was using, but it looks like they look like ghosts with this. So let's go back to...
Well, I was just going to say, you know, just to clarify for people that the reason that, you know, it looked great on the other image, but it doesn't look so good on this one is no doubt because there are certain brightness and contrast adjustments that worked on that other image, but are just not really working here. So you can certainly start with a preset, and then you just go in and modify the brightness and contrast to fit the image you're working on.
Yep, and that's what we're going to do. So Underwater 4 is what I chose when I edited this photo originally. And this is the steps that I went through to get to here. But what we're going to do is I'm going to take it to Underwater 5. So, and these are just, not that one. I think it's Underwater 3. So these are just, I like this. So what we can do here is you can see it's a much bluer background than we had when I originally edited this photo. And I actually don't mind it. So I want to be able to kind of, we can tweak and we can see how adjusting all of these hue and saturation and luminance in the color adjustments makes a dramatic difference in the way that the image turns out. So let's just start with the hue. I have the red all the way over to orange. And in this image, it is only seeming to change the a little bit, there isn't much red in this image. So it was only changing the color of her white tank top there. And so you can see with the orange, I've noticed that a lot of my blonde people get red hair underwater. And so you can kind of adjust for that using the orange, but it affects skin tones most dramatically. I think that the orange hue saturation and then the orange or the hue and the saturation, which I have way up to 68, and the luminance have the absolute most effect on skin tone underwater than any of the other colors. So if we switch it, let's switch it to, there's a way to do all three of them next to each other.
Just click
there
on
we go, color. Got it. Okay, so as you can see, the saturation of oranges is plus 68. When you're shooting above water, I don't ever go to more than plus 3 or 4 for orange saturation. And luminance, I usually keep about plus 2 or 3. So you're pushing your skin tones much further in here in the color adjustment than you would ever do above water. Because if you have it set to 0, let's do that. Look how pale they become. So, yeah. So we really do up those colors, and you know we can play with those settings right here within this panel. It makes a huge difference when you're looking at how to do it. And as you can see, let's go back to underwater 3 and get it back to the right settings. There we go. So it's fun to play. And the other cool thing is when you're playing with these, we can really mess with the luminance of the blue and the aqua as well. As you can see, you can just really change the look by changing the saturation in the colors of the background color of the pool, so you don't have to stick with exactly what was there. It's fun to mess around and see, look how orange we can make, or you know, how much greener we can make it just by a few simple adjustments. So
Yeah.
So anyway, it's fun to see.
It really changes it into a different scene because, that heavy-handed blue color cast initially is just so dominant, and then you're able to really kind of fine tune and finesse this, to create something different.
Yep, and you really have to sit there and play with every single one of those within the hue, saturation, and luminance, and you push it much further than you would. It's like almost when you're shooting, you know, people talk about taking HDR too far. You turn your settings up way too high. You need to be really, don't push it too much because it's going to be out of this world. With underwater, it's the exact opposite advice. It's push it further than you ever expect. Take it as far as you possibly can, making sure that you're getting exactly the colors you want. Bring it into Photoshop. Do your little adjustments. Bring it back into Lightroom and push it even further, because you can just take that TIFF file. If you, like, let's say we got this kind of where we want to go, we kind of like the white balance, and we can then open it up in Photoshop, remove all of this stuff, and then bring it back in, and then you can push it even further.
Mm-hmm. So, and I can really see how, because you are pushing the colors so much, working with a JPEG file would definitely not be as ideal, because of course the JPEG file is going to have at most 256 different tonal levels per color channel, whereas with a RAW file you're going to have, you know, many thousands.
Yep, and it makes a whole world of difference. I mean, you can adjust those JPEG files, but it's going to be a lot harder to get as much control and quality. So here is the finished image. And as you can see, this has been re-imported into Lightroom, and every single one of the sliders is set back to 0 because this is a copy of the TIFF file that had come back in. So when I come back into Photoshop afterwards, none of my other settings that I had are visible the way that I process. But because of that, I can go through and I can tweak the file even more. I can bring it even warmer than I could originally. It's kind of an interesting hack as a way, but it's destructive. So it's not something that I would because I can't go all the way back and make the changes to my original again. So it's not something I would suggest, but it's really great for those tiny little details, those tiny little finesses, and doing your sharpening and your contrast a little bit better. And if you're going to use any plugins, like I love to use a MacFun plugins, I am able to take this file that's almost finished and then bring it into a program like MacFun to do even more sharpening details or add a little bit more depth to the file that is easily done in Photoshop or Lightroom.
Yeah. So when you're correcting the skin tones, obviously when you're working with, you know, models in the pool, you know, it seems like the big issues are, one, the overall blue cast, and then of course making the skin tones look pleasing. I mean, I'm sure that there are other issues too, but are you ever doing any localized work in terms of brushing on skin tone specific correction?
Yeah, I am. So like, let's look at her. Like, I don't know if it'll work for this image, but we'll give it a shot. Okay. So, on a lot of my files, what you're going to do is you're going to see that skin tones are going to be different the closer the image is to the camera front, and the further it is back or the deeper it is in the pool, you're going to get a more blue tone. So what I'll do is I'll come in here, and I've actually created brush presets as well. So under here, I have one called underwater color correction. So I have a brush that pushes the temperature up, the tint up, and the exposure up a little tiny bit. And so I can then go in and paint that directly on to her leg. See, there's starting to paint, and my flow is pretty low. So we'll crank it just for an example here. And we don't want auto mask on because auto mask creates little splotches, especially when we're working with not that great of a contrast difference. Okay, so I have the mask overlay showing here, but we can take it off. And there we go. And you can see that that's too orange for this color correction, but then I can go through and lessen the strength of it that way, or I can lessen the strength of it by hitting the density button and bringing that down. Is that, Nope, that's not,
But we can, I see that, right, yeah.
But you can come down here back to the exposure and change it. You can come and lessen it by just bringing those sliders down to exactly where you need it. But yes, I absolutely use that. I also have one called Deep Under. So like, let's go back to this image right here. And we are going to add an adjustment brush. And I think I have one called Deep Under. Here it is. So it's called Deep Under. And I'll take my brush and I'll make it very large. All right, there we go. I'm increasing the size of my brush. And I will just paint on a darker color here. And the Deep Under has, my temperature has turned so it's bluer. I have my tint turning a little bit more red, and my saturation is up. I want the colors that are currently there to get extremely high, and I'll paint on a bunch of color right here in Lightroom. As you can see, it's really changing the look of the image to change with the localized brushes. So not only do I mess a lot with the color sliders when I'm editing underwater, I also have created preset brushes to create the looks, the looks that I'm going for right here. And so like, we can decrease the exposure and I can up the saturation. And even with this one, I'll make it a heck of a lot bluer than I did originally. So there we go. So that's the kind of adjustments that can be done. And I do in Lightroom when I'm editing underwater.
Cool. And then the work that you would do in Photoshop, is that where you're handling obviously the more complicated retouching, but do you ever do any simple retouching in Lightroom in terms of removing the little drains and stuff?
And I do sometimes, but I don't like where it grabs from sometimes, so I'll have to, when I do it, I have to come way in close, move it around, I'll find a little spot, and I'll increase the size, and I will grab that, and I will do it. But it's not, I don't have nearly as much control over it as I do in Photoshop. And so even though I can remove little pieces, I don't always like doing the larger stuff, like we're coming all the way over here, like the light. I don't like exactly I don't like having to pick where it grabs from. I think the algorithms in Photoshop do a slightly better job. And then I can also clone stamp for texture. So I'm not just duplicating. And see, there's a little bit of ghosting there. There's little stuff that I don't quite like. Even if I move it back up again. So,
Yeah, Photoshop is definitely the program for more control in terms of retouching.
Correct. And so it works. And you can mess with it. And you can do it. And you can grab from different places. But for the kind of control that I like to have, it's not my ideal solution. And so if I'm going to go into Photoshop to do things like remove this little drain, I'll just do all of this kind of work in Photoshop instead of here. Even though I can do it technically here.
Yeah. Well, I think some of the simple stuff can be done in the Lightroom, like whatever, little things floating in the water or whatever, or just tiny little blemishes on the surface of the floor of the pool and stuff like that. But for the more complex stuff, Photoshop stuff can give you.
Right. And since if I'm already going to go into Photoshop, then I will make sure to just do everything in Photoshop. And that way I keep it on one layer so I can go back and readjust it later. Or like one set of layers. Yeah. Into one little thing. So I like to keep all of my localized things like that done in one place where I can go back to easily.
Yeah. I imagine that some of those images must look really nice when printed large.
It's fun. It's really fun. And it makes me want to get an even larger. I've been looking at getting high resolution camera bodies and lenses that could handle it so I could even go larger than I have been, because it's really fun. It is something that my clients seem to really enjoy, and it's something that my children are really proud of, to have images large on the wall of them. So this is one of their favorites.
You, what a cool thing to do, with your curiosity to share, too. Mm-hmm. And you've done some images where the model is wearing like really a big voluminous dress that's got like a lot of material on it. And what's it like working with heavy fabric and clothing in the water?
Well, with this red dress, a lot of the dress is actually made from compositing multiple images. This dress is just a sheer dress that has two or three folds of fabric that came off of it. And it was really pretty, but it needed a lot more volume. I entered this into a contest where the theme was crimson. So I really added a lot more dress that was shot by her, or shot of images of her in that pool the same day with the same light, and just repositioned it around to add in more volume, because the dress didn't have all this volume. And the reflections are all reflections that were shot. I put two or three reflections from the pool in this image as well. So it's a composite creation, but it's from three to four images that were all shot in sequence at the same exact time, because this dress wasn't so voluminous, which really is a huge advantage for the model, because she's upside down in the water wearing a dress, and it's pretty difficult. And this woman is a professional synchronized swimmer and a professional mermaid, and she coaches children in synchronized swimming. So I feel comfortable with her being in a dress like this underwater in my pool, whereas like that other model we were talking about earlier who didn't know how to swim, there's no way I'd have her go upside down. Now, there's one more image I want to show you that is pretty intense and crazy. It was the same model. We had her come back another day, and she is wearing this wedding dress. This wedding dress, nothing is added. This is basically straight out of Lightroom. I haven't even done, I kind of like the bluer tone on this image, so I'm kind of leaving it more ghost-like like this. All of the fabric there is the fabric from that dress in that pool at that shot. So she was able to flip herself upside down, move and flutter that dress all around with her hands, and create a peaceful look on her face while almost drowning. I mean, it was pretty crazy. And we went to go, she couldn't even stand up and get out of the pool with this dress on. It's clipped onto the back of her using industrial strength clamps that you'd use like on a photo shoot to keep the dress in position on her belly. And the dress is so heavy, it took two of us to lift the dress off. So I've heard stories of people drowning in wedding dresses because they go out into rivers and streams and in heavy dresses. I don't recommend it. Use the compositing that we did on the red dress. This model would probably be the only model that I would do this with. in a calm pool because she is so incredibly skilled. The stress and could probably weigh about 100 pounds as we were lifting it out of the water.
Yeah, that's pretty significant.
Yep. So
I imagine as a professional mermaid, she probably has a good breath holding skill.
Amazing. She can hold breath double as long as I can. So I'm mm-hmm. raising up to take more pictures of her, coming back down again, and she's still going. So, I mean, it's incredible. So if you are looking for a model to shoot, I recommend looking, if you don't want to just do your family and kids, if you really want to do the models, look at talking to local synchronized swimming schools. Look at people who have been synchronized swimmers who are also ballerinas. It makes a huge difference in their gracefulness and their movement. I found that ex-dancers, when you're not doing crazy things like this with a heavy fabric, dancers are better than people who are pro swimmers. Pro swimmers still make funny faces underwater. Surfers are hilarious because they do these exaggerated big poofy cheek faces, and they can hold their breath for a really long time, but they don't know how to look graceful while doing it. So if you're looking to create grace and beauty, look for dancers and talk to your local synchronized swimming schools. Those women really know how to move underwater, and they'll make your first experiences a lot easier. So
great tips. Wouldn't have thought of some of those, but excellent. Well, that was very, very cool. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was fun. And I just really encourage people to just go out and give it a try, because it seems overwhelming at first, but you can do it. And don't be disappointed when you look at the back of the picture and you see a totally blue image. That's completely normal. And with Photoshop and Lightroom, we can really bring those colors out that I don't even think we're aware of are there.
So Erica, where can people find out more about you? Out on the web and see more of your images?
Well, I am the only Erica Thornis in the world, so it's pretty easy to find me. I also am an author on lynda.com, and I've got two courses out there, and it's fun to be an author with you there. You can also find me. I've got some underwater articles on Photo Focus as well as Smug Mug. So if you type in Erica Thornis Smug Mug Underwater, some really great shooting tips will be there that we didn't cover in this course. So there are some places out there to look for me. So it's just, if you Google Erica Thornis underwater, a lot of really great stuff will come up. So I'd love to hear from you and your underwater adventures. If any of your viewers decide to shoot, I am open to receiving feedback, and I will help. I'll help you in any way I can.
Oh, cool. I will put a link in the show notes to the Smug Mug resources that you mentioned, and also to maybe some of your stuff on Photo Focus. And what are the subjects of your lynda.com courses?
Well, I've got one on shooting kids in the park. Well, no, wait, rephrase that. I have one on taking beautiful pictures of children in the park. And then I also have one. I know, it's gotta watch those words. And then I also have
I know.
On photo archiving, so that we make sure to preserve those family memories of our beautiful days in the park with our children. So they kind of work together in a way. So I highly recommend you check them out, because I think they're a great resource for the beginning to intermediate photographer.
Great. And I'll put links to those in the show notes as well. So great conversation. It was cool to get a little bit of backstage peek at how you process some of those wonderful images. I've just kind of been transfixed by some of the recent ones you've been posting, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to get a sense of some of your process. Great tips.
It's fun. It's really fun. And just remember to save those presets, and because you never know when you're going to need them again. And also just to really push your images further than you thought was possible. I think that makes a huge difference.
Great, cool. All right, well, thanks so much, and thank you out there in internet land for tuning in and joining us here on The Fix. If you go to the website, thisweekinphoto.com/thefix, you can subscribe to the show, and if you want to get in touch with us, there is a contact us link at the top of the page. You can give suggestions about topics you want to see covered in future episodes of The Fix, or maybe guests and photographers you want to see interviewed about how they process their images. And one last thing to mention, we still have another week of the book giveaway. The book giveaway is closing on Wednesday, July 27th at the end of day Pacific Standard Time. So if you want to get more details on how you can win the Rocky Nook book of your choice, check back on the episode 74 page, and that's where all the details are. Which reminds me, Erica, this is kind of momentous. This is the 75th episode of The Fix.
That's awesome. I'm really happy to be your guest for the 75th episode.
Yeah, cool. All right, take care, and we'll see you around.